My guest Andrea Martin has a talent for becoming other people. For 7 years, she co-starred on the SCTV comedy series. She developed the character of Edith Prickly, the station manager of the SCTV network. Her other recurring characters included the cleaning lady Perini Scleroso and the self-absorbed talk show host Libby Wolfson. Martin has 3 movies scheduled to come out this year, and you can still see her on SCTV reruns, but she also has a comedy special this month on Showtime, and it co-stars SCTV alums Catherine O'Hara, Martin Short, and Dave Thomas. Andrea Martin plays a screwed-up showbiz version of herself. The premise of the show is that this Andrea Martin has just recovered from a nervous breakdown, and we're watching her comeback performance. The special is called Andrea Martin Together Again. Martin debuts several new characters in the special, but she also brings back the abrasive, cackling Edith Prickly.
The character of Edith Prickly started when I was doing the stage show in Toronto, the Second City stage show. And the Second City, I'm sure people know about this, but I'll just tell you a little bit about it, is based on improvisations. And that night we got a suggestion from the audience to do a scene on a parent-teacher scene. And the parents were called in, parents of uncontrollable, unruly children were called in to talk to the teacher. And I grabbed a costume backstage. I had no idea what kind of character I was going to do. And the costume I grabbed was a leopard jacket and a leopard hat. And it was a costume, actually, that belonged to Catherine O'Hara's mother. And it wasn't a costume of hers, it was actually her wardrobe. And I came on stage in it, had no idea who I was going to do. I think I actually slipped on a pair of black glasses, too. I walked in, and Catherine, who was playing the teacher, said, "And you must be Mrs. Prickly." And I said, "That's right, dear. Edith Prickly. Prickly's a name, parenting's a game. Ha!" I don't know where it came from other than something deep inside of me, and it's something I got to very quickly, and it really stuck from then on.
Gee, when you put on clothes that are somebody else's clothes, will a new personality just come over you?
Yeah, oftentimes it does. I've oftentimes jokingly said that I create a character from the outside in. I don't know if that's the training that I've had, you know, so much improvisational work. But costumes are very important to me, that I get, even in a movie, even in a film, a very straight part, they really have to feel right on me. I can't even wear the perfume that I normally wear as myself. I have to find another kind of perfume so I can really create that person. And it certainly happens in the characters that I do on, you know, the comedy characters too.
When you're working on characters, do you ever go to places just to sit and observe people?
When I was doing SCTV, I really did that. The best places were malls. Malls. Gee, that's a bad word now. I said mall and I felt like a tiger being, I'm sorry. I used to go to shopping centers and malls and sit on the benches there, watch people go by, watch people relate to the salespeople, watch mothers with their kids. It was a real important place for me to be. And then sometimes what I'll do is think of a characteristic of somebody that really I found intriguing and then develop a character around that, you know. Just start with one little thing.
It's my impression that you gravitate to characters of an older generation, people who might have been the parental figures in your life, parents, teachers, parents of friends.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I grew up in a household where parties were the norm. In fact, my first memory of entertaining in front of anybody was at, I'm Armenian, both my parents are Armenian, was at an Armenian dance. There was this tradition that children would get up and dance and the adults would give them dollars. Gee, it doesn't sound good as I'm recalling it. But I remember doing that, getting up and dancing to this Armenian song and not feeling at all inhibited and looking at all the wonderful faces around me and feeling very comfortable in that adult world. So In fact, I always felt more comfortable in that adult world than I did with peers. You know, growing up in Portland, Maine, and Armenian in a very WASPy community never made me feel completely at ease. So maybe I did gravitate toward the community itself, towards the adults that I so often live with in my home, because my parents were constantly socializing. So that's a pretty good observation.
You have several movies coming up. One of them is called Rude Awakening. And in this one, you play one of these older, prudish, pinched characters that, you know, it reminds me of some of the characters that you've done in sketches. But this is a movie, so you're in character in a different way than you are in a comedy sketch. And I'd like for you to compare what the difference is when you're acting between doing a character in a movie and doing a character in a comedy sketch.
Gee, it's a very fine line, actually. Let me think about this character that I play in this movie, April Stuhl, is in a scene that's actually quite sketchy, I guess. It's a cameo appearance. I play Buck Henry's wife in it. And I think that the... I think that if I hadn't worked hard enough to ground that character in reality and in the situation that she was in, again, I was surrounded by very real people, Cindy Williams and Robert Carradine and Eric Roberts and Julie Haggerty, I think it would have come across as a sketch. So I think the difference is, in a sketch, it's not a very real world. I guess you assume that it's... A whimsical world. It's actually going to exist for like 3 minutes. It's just a shot in the dark there, and it's a fantasy that you create for a few minutes. In a movie, and in a very real part, you have to create a very real world, and it continues for much longer than 3 minutes. So I guess that's the difference there.
Do you think that casting directors see you as an actor in terms of the characters that you've done on SCTV?
You know, I don't know what casting directors think when they see me. I think that they think I'm real funny and oftentimes don't know what to do with me, to tell you the darn truth. I don't know. I certainly have played very real parts in movies, and I guess you didn't see Black Christmas with Olivia Hussey. That couldn't have been more real a part. And Margot Kidder. And in a movie that I'm doing called Worth Winning, I play a very centered, grounded person, a child psychologist, actually. And, you know, it's a bit like 30-something. It's so grounded in yuppiedom reality. I don't know. I wish I knew, to tell you the truth. I wish I knew what went through their minds. I don't know. That's a hard one for me. You know, I get real angry sometimes when I seem not to be auditioning for parts that I think I can play because somebody might think it's too sketchy, too comic. I'm not sure about that one. I don't know how to change that.
SCTV is still in reruns, so in the minds of viewers, it's still a current show. Do you think of that as being good for you or bad for you?
Oh, I think it's attracted a different audience now. And none of my peers watched it because they all had children and went to bed at 11, and it's a late-night show.
Uh-huh.
So now I think because it's on at 10:30, it is in Los Angeles on Nickelodeon. I don't know what it is across the country. It's attracted a different audience. I guess it's gratifying for my ego to think that I'm being watched by people that truly appreciate that kind of comedy. There's a certain point where I get frustrated with holding on to the past and having to recall those years because that seems to be that show. Seems to have given me the most notoriety, so people hold on to that thought, and they also like the show. So that's what I find I talk about the most, and I'm proud of it. I think there's a certain point, though, you know, where I feel like I'm Ringo Starr of the Beatles or Paul McCartney of the Beatles, where you just have to sort of let go and continue with your life. So it's a blessing in disguise, really. It'll be nice to be able to do something that has as much
impact.
Yeah. And be able to talk about that for a while and then end it with talking about SCTV.
Can I ask you some SCTV questions now that we now that we've gotten into this? My goodness, you're from Maine.
Yeah.
So you were the non-Canadian on SCTV.
Harold Ramis is non-Canadian, and Joe Flaherty is non-Canadian. We happened. Let me see. Harold was brought up from Chicago, and Joe was brought up from Chicago, and I was actually living in Toronto. We all started the theater company there together, and then it evolved into the television show.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch a lot of television as a kid growing up in Maine?
No, I really watched no television as a kid growing up in Maine, which is really ironic that I would be doing 7 years of parodying television. I started in children's theater in Portland, Maine, and then did, you know, about 5 years of summer stock, Kenny Bunkport Playhouse, the Algonquin Playhouse. I played Liat in South Pacific at the age of 13 and got my equity card. Then I majored in drama in Emerson College in Boston, and then went on to New York to do Your Good Man Charlie Brown. And the only television I ever watched was Ernie Kovacs, the Nairobi Trio, and occasionally Ed Sullivan, and a couple of episodes of Lassie, but that's it. So I think what people like about SCTV is a great cross-section and references of comedic sensibility. And so oftentimes the theatrical parodies we did, like Annie or Indira, which was based on Evita, were things that I had were my preference, and that's what I wanted to parody. So it wasn't all just television that we parodied, and if I ever had to do any television parodies, believe me, I spent hours watching the shows in a little room to get a handle on what we were actually parodying. I remember watching one of the guys, I think, gee, who wrote this? What's My Line? We did a parody of What's My Line called What's My Shoe Size? And I played Arlene Francis on it and had never, ever seen What's My Line and spent hours watching the tape of the show so I could get the impersonation of Arlene Francis. So it's kind of weird. That's how my life ended up.
Since you hadn't watched TV much, yeah, as a child, when you actually started watching it more studiously right, as an adult during your SCTV years, do you think the television looked even more absurd to you because you were watching it and parodying it at the same time?
More absurd to me. Boy, I guess I'd never sat back and watched television as a form of entertainment. It was never a relaxing thing all those years. It was always like work when I watched it. So I never felt like I could unwind after a day, you know, and just sit in front of the TV and watch All in the Family or something. I'd think, how would I get that voice down? How would I do that little mannerism? And it was the hardest thing to parody all those years were sitcoms, you know. They really, I could never get a handle on how to make a parody of them because they all seem so much of a parody themselves. It's kind of weird when I did my own sitcom. I felt like I was actually living the parody that I'd been doing all those years. It was very bizarre.
So tell me more about how that felt. This was a sitcom that was this kind of a spin-off from Kate and Ally. You played someone who ran a small cable TV station, and that character was spun off into her own series. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Character called Roxy.
Roxy.
Uh-huh. That's right. I don't know. It was pretty strange, you know, pretty strange being very sincere about issues that I could have cared less about, like really being intense, coming home to my husband. Honey, you cannot believe what happened at the station today. I just felt like I was doing children's theater, you know. My back was sort of bent forward and my arms were gesturing far too much for any human being. I just couldn't get behind the real world that they were creating for me. It just didn't seem very real, you know. It was hard.
Well, what do you do in a situation like that? Is there any way you can take more control of it?
I guess you get off the air very quickly. That's what happened to me. I guess you don't have a choice. I guess the networks tell you for you what you do. Thank you very much, and good luck in another form. That particular show was a really real hard one for me. I couldn't find any way to comment on the I felt a real necessity to comment on who the person was, because I just didn't believe that anybody like that really existed, you know. And that's not what they want. They really want you to be that person. So, you know, I'm sure there are other, my gosh, Taxi, those people are very real and have an edge to them that I can really identify with, and Cheers. And there are certainly shows that are exception, but this was not one of them.
Well, it must be a really difficult decision to make when you, if you want to do a TV series and the one that you can do isn't one that feels very real to you. I mean, if you turn it down, you feel like you're passing up a big opportunity, and if you take it, you feel like it's not really you.
Yeah, it's a dilemma. That's where a good agent comes in, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know, you grew up in Maine, and I think of you as being very, I don't know if hyper is the right word, but you have all these different characters always coming out of you, and I think of Maine, this is perhaps a stereotype, but I think of the people in Maine as being very, very much more low-key, speaking very slowly, being much more contained. I was wondering if you felt somewhat on a different wavelength from a lot of the people around you when you were growing up.
Well, we were talking about the characters that I play, and I think that a couple of the characters are very slow and contained and provincial. And Yolanda de Vilbiss is a very quiet, she's a quiet spoken person without very, she doesn't have very much finesse in entertaining. And those are the kind of people that I remember, a woman like that in church at St. Luke's Church in Portland, Maine, standing up and saying, the flowers this week have been donated by some women in the pew women, and let's thank them very much from us. And so that's a character that came from my days in Maine, being an energetic gal in an Episcopalian church and looking at this woman who was so painfully shy. So I guess I've used them. I guess I've used them all.
Andrew,
I'll be using you.
Andrew Martin is my guest. I have to ask you this, and I'm not really sure how to ask this, but you know, your Showtime special Together Again is a kind of spoof of an entertainer who's had a nervous breakdown and they're back with their comeback special. And so you watch it and you just have to ask yourself, is just a parody of the genre, or has Andrew Martin had a breakdown herself, and is this like her parody of her own comeback? So you'll forgive me for asking, but I just feel like I have to.
I won't forgive you, but I just have to answer the question since this is your show. I have not had a nervous breakdown, what the heck? I sound like I'm going to be carted away in a minute for that response. I haven't had a nervous breakdown. I say I haven't had a nervous breakdown. Why am I defensive? I thought what was intriguing about that kind of thing, a girl having a nervous breakdown, was a really, oh gosh, being able to stand outside of anything that I consider far too serious in my life and be able to laugh at them. So I guess in some way it was therapeutic. I don't think I could ever have a nervous breakdown, to tell you the truth, because at a moment when I am the most down, thing snaps in me and I just look at it and laugh at it and just realize, as Edith Prickly says, never let yourself get down unless you're willing to do something worthwhile once you're down there. I guess it's a little checks and balance thing that I've been born with. I'm really lucky to have. So you can be calm about this, that I wasn't in shock therapy when I was doing this special. I'm not on lithium right now as I talk to you.
You know what it is, that a lot of us, I think, have the stereotype, too, that anyone who has so many personalities that they're capable of doing and so many different tones might be a little imbalanced. You know, how can you possibly keep all of that in balance?
I work out. I eat very well. And I walk every day for 2 miles. It's sort of what you were expecting me to be, the female Jonathan Winters.
That's a scary idea, isn't it?
I don't know. No, I don't think I am that crazy. No, I think I am pretty balanced, to tell you the truth. I mean, I have 2 children. I have lots of friends. I live in the Palisades in California. You know, one part of me is very sane and extremely boring, to tell you the truth. I'm a Capricorn. You know, I'm very pragmatic, practical, obsessively clean. I like things in order. And then there's another side of me that needs to have an outlet for all these characters. But so far, I've kept it pretty well in balance, I think.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you what kinds of roles you'd like to be doing in movies. Like what kind of direction you see your career taking?
You know what? I'd like to play a part in a film that allows me to be a woman that I am, and an attractive, smart, together woman. With an edge, with all the quirkiness that I bring to the characters that I do. Allow me just to be who I am without wearing a leopard jacket and glasses, and just rely on things that are instinctively funny about me. I think it would be a great thing for any casting director to decide to do. That's what I'd like to be doing.
Andrew Martin, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.